Checking back in with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy for another Tacky Talk. It's been a week since we chatted last. How are you doing, Tacky?
Doing good, Joe. Good to see you again on a post-hurricane interview.
Thankfully, it was not as nasty as it could have been for us here, at least. Other parts of the state, certainly. And I know, I'm sure you've heard from your colleagues about how they got impacted in the western part of the state.
Yeah, no, we've been very fortunate on the East Coast because those of us been around for years remember Bob and Gloria. Those are my two hurricanes. And the impact of the wind in particular coming off the water and the tide is, you know, just right. You know, and you got a storm surge plus the heavy rain, you know, flooding is inevitable in Quincy. It's just a fact of life here if you get to that stage. So we were extremely fortunate on the eastern side of Massachusetts. And you're right. I mean, my friends in Western Mass had to deal with torrential downpours for essentially 2 days, plus two tornadoes did touch down.
Right.
In the Stowe region. And, you know, a lot of watches even up far as Andover regarding tornadoes.
Yeah. Last year there were tornadoes in the Cape. So, I mean, you know, the weather is definitely changing for sure.
No, it's an argument for climate change. I mean, we do have a lot of interesting weather. I mean, what's the saying? If you don't like the weather, wait 10 minutes in New England. And I've experienced my share of, you know, temperature drops and rises really fast and clouds appearing out of nowhere and the weird 128 belt line on snow and rain. I mean, I do know all that. But I mean, the strength of the storms and the nature of them, particularly south of us, is a reflection of climate change. And I think, we've been relatively fortunate here in terms of bad storm impacts in terms of tropical storms. Unlike, you know, people living in southern United States and the islands and in northern South America. But, you know, this is a reflection of, the changing world we live in and the climate that's changing with it.
Speaking of the weather, it was just gorgeous for August moon this year. How did it go?
It was very good. It was a trimmed down August moon. They had the stage at Coddington School because the ground was extremely wet. This is the wettest summer in my memory. The ground is saturated, so they moved the stage there. And had about 70 vendors all sold out. It had the rock climb. It was a very good crowd. And a lot of people were wearing masks, even though they were outdoors. So there's a lot of a caution out there, folks, regarding their personal safety. But I think it was a wonderful time had by all. They drew a very good crowd as people still want to be outdoors. And the Patriot Ledger had one group, I remember being interviewed coming in from Connecticut.
Wow.
Which I thought was interesting.
Interesting. Speaking of masks, Tacky, let's talk a little bit about the pandemic. Unfortunately, here we are over a year and a half later, still talking about it, but just today, mask mandate approved for public school students in Massachusetts.
Yeah, welcome to the constant moving world, the pandemic, right? I've said this once and I'll say this again. Every time I say something, last interview may change by the next one because we keep getting new information and the world, again, keeps shifting us in COVID. And COVID is just not letting up because it keeps moving faster than we can keep up with it. Which just means it's very difficult. Everything we knew, again, you know, the year and a half ago isn't what we know now. And the transmissibility of Delta in particular in unvaccinated children is a grave concern. And, I do understand that kids have a better survival rate and have a better resistance in terms of the impacts of the disease. However, it does not make them immune to it. They can still get ill and they can still be carriers and they can die. I mean, kids are dying around the country. It's not as dramatic as the senior citizen population, but it does indeed happen. So people should, you know, get that in the mind that kids can't die. So, but also the carriers, that's the other big thing. I know that a lot of school teachers are vaccinated, a lot of school personnel is vaccinated, but given the fact there are breakthrough cases, so to speak, or as I like to say, the efficacy percentage that says you're going to get infected, the possibility doesn't exist. I mean, people should not have been under a myth that quote unquote invulnerable. You're not. You have a percentage of a chance that you won't get infected, and you always want a better percentage. And with Delta's much more and higher infection rate and a lower efficacy of the vaccines, you know, kids being a carrier, school teachers are vaccinated, but there's still that percentage because of continuous exposure, because they're constantly around them in enclosed space all the time. know, this is a safety matter for the kids as well as the teachers and yourself at home as parents and family members. Mm-hmm. Because the kids can bring diseases back to home. I mean, you know, as what was my favorite line in law school? Every parent that's sick at night school had a child, and we wanted to keep away from that parent.
Yes.
Law school that was sick because we didn't want to catch whatever the kids just gave them. So these are common sense things, I think, that we all live with, whether you have children or not. You know, spend time with families that your children can carry and transmit diseases. And COVID is the same as any other respiratory airborne disease that you exhale out of your lungs. So, you know, whether we diss it a norovirus, I mean, it spreads really fast. So I'm not surprised. And again, given Delta's real dramatic shift around the planet as being the dominant, more infectious strain, we may see some other changes regarding how we do in the fall, depending on the infection rate and the death count.
Yeah. Now with with Pfizer's vaccine getting the full FDA approval, do you think there should be a vaccine mandate in the schools?
Yep.
Simple answer, right? Yes.
Yeah, I'm at that point here. I mean, I'm just exhausted by this. I constantly keep talking about this, with just not between the two of us, obviously, but also many other people about vaccinations. And I keep getting very varied responses from folks that are like, you must do this to, well, you know, I really don't trust it, or, you know, all these long-term effects and these other comments. And, you know, as I said, with the kid mandate mask in school, this is not about you anymore. This is about us. And it's about all of us. And if you get infected and you do everything right, I've talked to people who did everything right and got infected and ended up hurting somebody else, they feel terribly, even though they did everything right. If you intentionally do something that you know there's a solution to, and the vaccine's available that reduces the possibility greatly about infecting other folks, and you don't do it, and you shrug it off as, oh, well, you know, if you listen to me talk to you, and you're that kind of person, I really don't know what to say anymore. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, well, you got hurt. It's like, okay. I mean, it's like, you know, I really doubt people are that callous. I really don't believe that in people here. We're not callous people. So, you know, I just find it relatively disturbing. If I hear like, oh, wow, I'm like, what? So, a lot of things I've heard from folks, particularly in business community and the medical community, is that if it's not FDA approved, they can't mandate it. And with Pfizer being FDA approved, employers and, you know, especially hospitals, you know, can mandate vaccine now. And there is actually a U.S. Supreme Court case from 1905 back in the polio smallpox era. Was it smallpox or was it mumps? I'm trying to remember which vaccine, but there's actually a U.S. Supreme Court case, which I think is Ryan versus U.S. Supreme Court, U.S. Department of Justice. I don't remember the case. I got to look it up. It's a 1905 case that actually allows the government to mandate vaccines.
Okay.
If we couldn't do that, we would still have smallpox and polio and mumps and measles, constantly. And now that we have chickenpox vaccine, I'd like to talk about that because I actually had chickenpox. I'm old enough, folks, that had chickenpox as a child. You know, my chickenpox vaccine, right, which is one of the newer vaccines for kids to get. Mm-hmm. So, there is U.S. Supreme Court precedent. So, you know, until someone wants to challenge that 1905 precedent, it would be interesting. And they already made one quick run in Indiana. Barrett Cohen rejected a stay on an Indiana case regarding mandatory vaccines at one of its universities. She rejected a stay, a restraining order on the matter. And it doesn't mean it can't go to the Supreme Court. But when the single justice that oversees that circuit rejects a restraining order stay on the matter, is an indicator the court is not going to take this up.
Right.
Anyway, this could change in a different circuit, but at least that circuit, Amy Barrett Cohen, the justice said no.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What's the policy for state employees right now, Jackie?
vaccinated or testing, although I suspect it's going to be vaccination soon.
Okay.
They're going to start mandating vaccination. I mean, I had a chat at the DA's office this morning. The good DA is definitely moving towards mandatory vaccination now. We've already heard from the treasurer and the auditor very early on vaccination and testing. Okay. I think testing is no longer going to be the requirement. It's just going to be vaccination.
Okay.
It's coming up unless you can produce a medical document that says otherwise.
Right.
And the religious exemption issue is fascinating because there's not that many religions that are anti-medical.
Hmm.
Right? You really think about it. I mean,
this religion is Christian Science. That's about it. Yeah.
That's about it. There's not a lot of religions that are anti-medicine. Christian Science is pretty much sums it up. There may be a few outliers, but most Christian organizations are not anti-medicine.
Right.
A Jewish religion is not anti-medicine. Buddhists are not anti-medicine. Actually, mm-hmm. Buddhists actually have medical doctors that travel the world, you know, just like many other countries where they have doctors that help undeveloped nations. I don't think Islam is anti-medicine.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
So medical exemption is actually very fascinating because it's like, other than born-again Christians, of course, as you said, I forgot it.
The Mary Baker Eddy Christianity, Christian yeah. Science, yeah.
Christian Science. I mean, you can't think of many other religions. I'm sure there are.
The Amish, perhaps. I don't know, but maybe.
The Amish has, they're not anti as well. The thing is, I perceive as anti-modernism.
Yeah.
They're not entirely true. They're kind of a gradual, like they use telephones.
Okay. Okay.
Do business in urban areas. They're not just trapped on a farm. People have this kind of misconception.
Yes. Yeah. So
they're not like 100% modernized, but they have bits and pieces because today's life requires you to do it. Because if you don't, then you can't really live to make money. So they've adopted bits and pieces, but I don't believe they're anti-medicine either.
Okay. All right.
So
interesting to see how that plays out then. You're right. In the courts. Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be very interesting because there is precedent regarding medical exemptions regarding best interests of a child. This is one of the things we learn in law school, and whether the court can substitute the judgment of family members to the benefit of the child's being alive.
Yeah,
it's like a death decision. It's not arbitrary, like should I take the kid for a cold or a fever situation, like life saving.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there's a standard regarding best interests of a child. So. But like I said, there's also a 1950 case that basically says that the U.S. government can mandate vaccination on anybody, regardless of anything else.
All right.
So honestly, this is going to be, we haven't dealt with this in a very long time. So it'll be interesting to see how this unfolds in the court system, the modern world, and how people are able to demonstrate they meet certain exemptions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Any update from Speaker Mariano on the status of the State House?
I honestly have not talked to the speaker this month. August is a quiet month of state. I was though I actually have a public hearing lined up for Monday. So
of course you do.
Yeah, of course we do. I already have two hearings this month, and me and the staff are preparing for another hearing on Monday. As we still discuss moving out bills and learning about stuff and taking meetings. But I've not talked to the speaker or the speaker staff. The initial thought again is October 1st.
Mm-hmm.
With Delta variant, and it's just spread rate is incredible. We've three times more infections that we know of since the beginning of July now, as well as hospitalization rates that isn't as bad as pandemic wave two or three, depending on how you want to do the math.
Right.
But I mean, it's still rising and trying to plateau out here. So we haven't really peaked, so to speak, in a proper way. And the high vaccination helps. So.
Yes.
I'm going to tell you, there's going to be a lot of hesitation still to return to the closet that we live in. We call it the State House. I think there's going to be a lot of conversations still about how we manage knowing people coming from the public. I am anticipating there is probably a conversation going about mandatory vaccination for employees. I think there's a conversation like that. Legislators are a little bit tricky because we don't have bosses exactly.
Right. Yeah.
So that's a little bit of a trickier situation. I mean, you could adopt it into the rules and all members, you know, follow the rules, but I don't think we're going to go that extreme.
Okay. Yeah. But there is a staff at the State House, an actual staff of work people, right, that work there.
Yes. My staff actually works under me. I'm their boss.
Right.
However, under the structure of administration, because I don't do the human resources, I don't do the payroll, I don't do all the all that back room stuff regarding employees. They're under the House employee system.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Speaker's office runs the House business office, which oversees the administrative end of everything, including human resources. And they could, via human resources, mandate a vaccine for all House employees. So that is very conceivable. So, but it's really about people from the outside coming in and how they manage. And the scary thing about Delta, I've talked about this last couple of times, is it appears that while you may not get ill, you may not get ill catching Delta if you're vaccinated. There's still a very, very high chance you're a carrier.
Oh yeah, that's the whole Provincetown case proved that, right?
Yeah, as opposed to original COVID and Alpha, where the vaccine made you non-infectious despite being infected. And that's a big deal because if you're non-infectious and you just have a couple of sniffles or a cough and you're having, you know, mild or no symptoms because you're vaccinated and it's fending off the disease, fending off the virus, and can't get a real good foothold in your lungs. But this isn't that case. We're fully vaccinated and still be asymptomatic and be a transmitter.
Yeah.
That's where it gets really scary.
Right. Somebody who's unvaccinated, and that could be devastating.
Correct. Because it can go from one vaccinated person to find an unvaccinated person.
Right.
And hence the mask issues back up again, because the mask keeps your breath to you, which means you don't give it to anybody else. And you're wearing a mask reduces the chances of you catching it because the respiratory particles stop at the mask.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly if you're staying up close to someone else, you probably should throw that mask away if you're close to somebody else.
Good idea.
Or, you know, hit it with a whole bunch of alcohol, rubbing alcohol, then throw it away. You know, obviously if you're masked and you're like 70 feet away from people, you know, outdoors, odds reduce dramatically.
Yep.
Again, the mask keeps your germs to you and helps keeps other germs from getting to you. But if two people are masked up, the odds of you catching germs from each other are extraordinarily low.
Right. Any kind of germs, not just COVID, any kind of germs, yeah.
And germs, yeah. Hence, you won't get, you know, flu and cold viruses as well as COVID, any respiratory disease. Hence, again, back to school mandate masks. Those kids basically have a very low percentage rate of giving each other anything that's a respiratory disease. There's always a small, you know, there's always a percentage, but... Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You know, interesting enough, if we get to cold and flu season deeper into the winter and the kids are masked up, I'm going to tell you, your kids are likely going to not catch the cold, flu, or norovirus.
That's right. Yeah, we saw it last year for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to see a very low chance because they were masked up.
Yeah.
So, you know, that maybe it'll take some pressure off a parent's mindset. You don't have to do concern yourself with a child that catches, you know, the flu. This is the concern. You still carry viral load. You can be infected with Delta, give it to others, despite being vaccinated, despite being asymptomatic or mild symptoms. And that's the concern we have at Stales.
Yeah, yeah. Can we talk about one of your favorite topics, Jackie? The census. Now the official numbers are in.
Official numbers are in. I'm still trying to find all those spreadsheets properly on the website. I've been relying on the newspapers to tell me what's going on.
Yeah.
So, well, congratulations. Thank you to everybody that filled out the census form. We cracked 100,000, over 101,000 people in Quincy, which then changes our federal funding numbers and also sets up our state formulas for the next decade, as well as projections, you know, projections on kids, projections on senior citizens, you know, projections for the next decade, which will help do a lot of these state and federal formulas regarding funding, particularly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So roadway money, school money, transportation money, public transit money, healthcare. We can now have a better projection out of where our spending needs to be, state and local. as well as these going to be your new funding formulas for the next 10 years.
Yeah, the mayor thinks it's still undercounted by about 5,000 people or so.
Yeah, I think it's still undercounted. I mean, I think we did a remarkable job. Some of you guys got my mailer that live in my district last April or May, depending when it got to you in the mail, to remind people, fellow assessors, we talked about this constantly. Mm-hmm. I knew Nikki talked about it at the clerk's office. I mean, a lot of us outreach was done by phone and email and door to door. And, you know, I got three mailers from the census and so forth. So, but yeah, there's going to be a degree of undercounting. And there's also a question of who was actually home. This was actually because it was actually going to be home to be counted during COVID, because those with a greater means found themselves hunkered down in a vacation home somewhere.
Right. Yeah. And a lot of them are still there. I was just back from the Cape last week and it is busy down there.
Yeah. And they may not have filled out a census form at all, or maybe didn't fill out a census form in Quincy.
Right.
And that's always my very concern last year regarding the census. I don't have a problem. If you have the means to be elsewhere out of an affected area, no, I'm not going to stop you. No, I'm going to speak poorly of it. You have the means to get out. No, you know, good. But I mean, you know, that was one of the concerns I had last year, is whether or not we have some undercounting. And obviously we have a large immigrant population here with various degree of English skills and understanding of U.S. government. Mm. That's always been expected to begin with. So there could be a number of different factors that led to a degree of unaccounting as well.
Yeah.
Maybe people couldn't move into their apartments, you know, or condos timely.
That's true too.
So, but still, I mean, the most point where we got above, I'm sure this will also affect our future projections and also shows our changing face of Quincy.
Yes, right, exactly. Yeah. The Asian population, I think, is now over 30%. So that's up from 24% 10 years ago. So that's the biggest minority, I believe, in the city.
Yeah, the biggest aggregate, you know, minority group is the Asian population, followed by Hispanics and Black population. And people have asked me, you know, what to look for. I'm like, look at the Hispanic number. I mean, that's grown by about 75%+ from a decade, which is very significant, because statewide, it is the largest aggregate non white populations, Latino, Hispanic, and nationally is also as well.
Correct. Yes, that's right. So it's a good reflection of how the population is changing right here in Quincy, right?
Yeah. It's the thing. The world's on the move at home, and you know, as I say, it isn't really so much exactly a decline. It's just that it didn't grow as rapidly in different sectors. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the new growth of people here are people who are people of color. And the fact is, you know, that almost 31% Asian American, you got, you know, close to 6% Hispanic, like 5.7, I think, mm-hmm. in that zone. Yep. I have looked at the Ledger article. And then I think the Black population's 3.6 or 3.4 or something like that.
3.4, yep.
Yeah, 3.4. So, you know, when you add that together, I mean, you know, you have well into 40% of the population of Quincy is not white.
Right. And in the schools, it's even more diverse. So, you know, the school department is responding accordingly. I think they had three new principals. I think two of them now are people of color. So they're making a definitive move toward reflecting the student body.
Yes. And hopefully people that will understand and adjust school policy reflect our school population. I think one of the major challenges we've always had in Quincy, and I think now in the United States, particularly in dense urban areas, is that the populace is changing and we need to change your population, how you provide services, and your understanding of what's going on, and importance of people to leadership that reflects the people that are being served, because it's a comfort issue. Mm-hmm. So as I tell folks, I'm very understanding on a lot of things. I do try to learn, but obviously I can't walk in your shoes, but I do my best to try to learn what I can. But I may not have the same emotional attachment to those issues because I didn't live that life. So I think it's very important that you know, the city as well as the state, and you know, not just uniquely Massachusetts or Quincy, but you know, around the country, you know, really take a hard look at putting people in positions of leadership that actually have walked in the shoes of people they serve. so they have a better understanding of how to improve services and relate to those people to trust the government, the service provided.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit, if we can, Tacky, about redistricting, or if there's anything to report there. I know locally, Nikki Crispo is looking at 6 new voting precincts in the city. So does that change the legislative districts on the state house?
For me, no. Okay. Not really. I mean, it's going to still be 43,900 and some odd people. So, you know, it doesn't have 44,000 folks. So, you know, if the city needs to add a precinct to each ward, all that means to me is more precincts.
Okay.
Probably it won't change much. I actually do not know what the city charter requires regarding precincts per population. I honestly don't know. But one of the things that may result, and I'm not saying anything on behalf of the clerk or the council, so don't say I'm saying this on their behalf, but it actually be interesting regarding where people vote.
Right. Yes. I think they're going to be doubling up on a lot of places just out of necessity. There's not many public buildings left to use.
Absolutely. And with COVID, private buildings are much more hesitant because yeah. We have seen housing complexes like Pagnano Towers, O'Brien Towers. Where's another one?
Sawyer Towers.
Sawyer Towers that are also voting precincts and a high degree of concern regarding COVID-19.
Yeah.
Right. So there's less private spaces willing to host as well over time. So this could potentially create a situation where two precincts make up a neighborhood as opposed to one precinct.
Right.
Not exactly, right? We all know it's not going to fit perfectly in a precinct, but also may create, you're right, double up. So yeah. You have a much more convenience to get to a voting locale where it's two precincts being voting there as opposed to one, even though you've all been voting the whole time. Mm-hmm. You know, some of those guys, lines on the edges that can get to that voting location, you've always gone, mm-hmm. Becomes a double precinct. The drawback, of course, is the fact that now you have to increase manpower for voting because you have additional precincts when you have additional poll workers for that one precinct.
That's right. Yep.
So you got that factor, but with things like mail-in ballots and early voting, you know, that may reduce pressure on that level as well. So personally, from my district standpoint, adding additional precincts each ward probably doesn't mean much.
Okay, all right.
But it'll be interesting of how where the lines are drawn and how far out. Like I fully anticipate my Ward 1 area will keep stretching out down Furnish Brook Parkway and down Southern Artery and at some level, and McGrath Highway at some level, because just the growth is in the middle part of the city.
Right, yep.
It's going to stretch out, you know, the peninsulas out to the edges. And same thing on the Milton border. Those are mostly single family homes.
Right, yes. So
you're probably going to have to stretch towards the middle as well, heading towards places like Crown Colony, Quincy Center, High Point, Marina Bay. Marina Bay probably will shrink, actually. Mm-hmm. That's going to be interesting to watch on how far the western part of the state stretches east and how much eastern parts of the state stretches west with the exception of Bay.
Yeah, I believe I think Nikki said that it has to be 3,400 people per precinct, voting age per precinct. So, you know, break that down to what, almost 102,000 people, how many of them are 18 and older, and you work it out that way.
Yeah, they'll probably be well over, I don't have the census breakdown, but I'm gambling it's probably over 65 to 70,000 people over age 18, maybe.
Yeah, that sounds about right, actually. Yep.
Over 70,000.
Yep.
I don't know what the city charter says regarding that. I'm sure Nikki will tell you in an interview, and you can tell me next time.
I will do that. Sure. But what about at the state level? What's going on with the redistricting there?
You're still holding public hearings on that.
Okay.
The chairs are taking meetings with, you know, various members about what they like to see in their districts in their region. Although I suspect the Western Mass guys are really kind of stretching it because they took a massive population decline.
Yep.
Starting at Amherst going westbound is pretty painful in terms of population decline, except for Springfield. I'm sure those conversations, particularly with those delegations that have lost a lot of population about which direction to go in. I think that's pretty much what's happening, just having meetings right now.
Okay. Stay tuned for that, as they say. There'll be no effect for the city elections this year, so it's all for the state elections next year.
Yeah, the precinct lines were not changed for the particular ward elections. That's what you got because of the nature of where we are in COVID. And normally, you would have new ward and precinct lines for the municipal elections this fall, but that be as it may. But under the Constitution, we need to have our lines ready to go by election day this year, so people know what rep districts will be running in next year.
Oh, makes sense, because you have to live in it for 1 year, right?
For 1 year. Okay. So it is grossly unfair to anybody to suddenly change the lines after the fact.
Okay.
There's a constant requirement. We actually have these lines ready done by the next election cycle. So, expect a very rapid vote on particularly the House redistricting. But as I said before and say again, I'm against the ocean. So I don't expect a whole lot changing in my
Unless world. There's a city of houseboats that springs up in Quincy Bay. Exactly. Or I don't know, they build a new development out on Moon Island or something.
Oh, no, well, that's Bruce Ayers' problem.
Oh, okay. All right.
New developer of Moon Island, don't talk to me, please.
Okay. Good to know. Hey, we don't normally talk about national, international politics, but do you want to comment at all on the Afghanistan issue, Tacky?
Sure. I mean, yeah, as people know, I like to talk about all kinds of things in the world. And I do have opinions, I have opinions like everybody else. But Afghanistan is really kind of a tragedy. I mean, it's been 20 years. I have vivid recollection of 9/11, like a lot of folks watching this that are a certain age. I remember where I was and what happened, followed by, rapid deployment to Afghanistan and, justifying our actions with the UN. And, Iraq followed, sometime after that. And, I'm actually old enough to remember the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. And, the tail end of that horror for the Soviet Union. Afghanistan is ruled by tribal governments. It's not a central government system. And the U.S. government wanted to put in a central government, as you saw. And the challenge is, how do you get all of these other parts of the country to want to be part of a central government? And you now see what happens if the other parts of the country do not want to be part of a central government. Right. And it's also a reflection of the U.S. military. The fact that the Taliban, was attacking U.S. troops for 20 years. And we've been engaged in a war, in a guerrilla warfare, essentially. But the reality is that, we've killed the U.S. government. We as a country have killed a lot of terrorists. We got Osama bin Laden. We took out a lot of lieutenants of that organization. And unfortunately, other organizations replace it, things like ISIS and the Taliban, new Taliban. It's not mm-hmm. like 20 years ago, but a new Taliban has replaced other organizations that are terrorist groups to the United States.
Right.
So, I think everyone was surprised by how speedy the takeover was by the Taliban, but they wouldn't have been able to move that fast if the tribal governments or regional governments around the capital really wanted to be a central government by that capital.
Hmm. Yeah, they would have protected it, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And nation building is a lot more difficult than people realize. You actually have to understand the people you're dealing with and the government you're trying to build and the people you're trying to build it with. But there's also a reflection of the sheer fear that the U.S. military has on other folks, because the Taliban would never attempt this type of sweep if the U.S. military was still there. I mean, I'll be honest, we would just crush them. We have the most fearsome military on the planet. We can go in and strike and crush forces in open ground. Hence why it was guerrilla warfare for 20 years.
Right, yeah.
And it's interesting because we, people call it a war on a government that doesn't exist.
Oh, right, yeah, we've won all the battles, but what war, you know?
Because there's no peace treaty of anybody that's not a government, right? Right. It's a terrorist group. So it's not a war in the sense like World One, World War Two, even, you know, Korea or Vietnam or other ones. This is a war against terror, as George W. Bush said.
That's right.
But it's not a war against a group you can negotiate a treaty with, per se. So the Biden administration actually has something very interesting here, because they ousted the government, never made peace with the ousted government. These people from 20 years ago are not the same people. Exactly the same people. I mean, they're the same people, but not identically all of them. That's going to try to form a new government, which is going to face the same problem that the U.S. did in tribal government. And of course, their neighbors around them are interested powers, including, you know, the Russians, the Chinese, the Pakistanis, the Indians, the Iranis, the Saudis, the Israelis. I mean, all in that same geographical zone. The geopolitics now shifts immensely with the U.S. military out of there. So we'll see what the other powers in the area want to do. And it's a country that the news has said constantly 75% dependent on foreign aid. So the U.S. government, of course, has stopped the tap. And the International Monetary Fund has stopped. And the only country that can actually supply them with any kind of financial assistance substantially is China. And those who watch the news knows that China has the Uyghur internment camps. They've interned, imprisoned, and quote unquote, re-educated 2 million Muslims as a domestic terror issue. That was their solution. You know, whether you want to call it a terrorist issue, it's up to which human rights group you want to talk to. But, you know, it's, you know, this is a Muslim led government in Afghanistan. I don't know how receptive we are to a country that is actively prosecuting, persecuting, imprisoning Muslims in their country. The Russians don't have the financial means like the old Soviet Union days to support a country entirely. Yeah. Iran sanctions by the U.S. have devastated that economy, so they can't support that. That Pakistan is also a heavily foreign aid dependent country. So it's very hard for Afghanistan to get support from them. And people to remember when the US invaded Afghanistan, one of the things we did was we got rid of the poppy fields.
That's right. Yep.
You know, we just wholesale just got rid of them all because the soil doesn't have good agricultural capacity. So, you know, the fear of returning of opium or heroin through poppy seeds is a distinct possibility now with this government that does have no ability to generate income on its own.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't, it's even mineral rich, that's great, but you can't get to the minerals, it doesn't matter. And is this government going to be willing to allow a foreign power to come in and drill on their property and take the riches? And does any private entity trust this government for them to come in to drill on the property and take the riches? I'm like, you know, yeah, they got a lot of mineral rights. Yeah, but do you want to do business with them? And that's a big deal. Yeah. So this is going to be a dynamic issue. Going to be seen for quite some time, even though it may not be on the 6 o'clock news or make your 24/7 news channels. Again, watch some foreign news channels on YouTube and you can get caught up. The other interesting dynamic is Kamala Harris is in Singapore and Vietnam. Singapore now and just going to Vietnam today, I think.
I think that's right. Yeah.
You know, the highest U.S. official to visit Vietnam since the end of the war.
Mm.
And with the U.S. pullout on Afghanistan allows us to refocus issues such as the South China Sea, where, for those who don't know, the Chinese government's been building islands, artificial islands, all through the South China Sea. That's the area around Cambodia, Vietnam, the Philippines, Singapore, Malaysia, Indonesia, that region of the world. Because of international law, that you're supposed to have so many miles around a landmass that you claim is your territory that you can control with shipping and fishing rights. Mm. And 40% of all shipping traffic passes through the South China Sea.
Mm.
So yes, this is a U.S. interest because whoever controls that waterway controls the trade and the fishing. So people think, oh, it's not a part of the world, it's not important to us. No, it's 40% of all shipping goes through there, including U.S. interest goods.
Right.
So the Suez got gummed up. Everything got gummed up everywhere else.
That's right.
So imagine a superpower controlling that region and destabilizing smaller countries' fishing rights as well, because it's fishing rights is a big deal.
Yep. That's what actually people themselves. Yeah.
Yeah. Our fishing right fights tend to be with Canadians up here.
Right.
But I mean, this is a big deal. So the U.S. government can refocus their efforts regarding the South China Sea policy issues and working with Southeast Asian nations to stabilize trade and security. The French keep a frigate in the region just to let the Chinese know they're around. And I just learned this week from DW News that the Germans have now sent a warship into the South China Sea also to send a message that we're paying it, they're paying attention to. So, you know, on the foreign policy issue, the two focuses, one, the huge geopolitical impact of Afghanistan in that region will be ongoing for a course this year, and I have no idea where it's going to go. And then, you know, watch the U.S. government refocus its efforts on Southeast Asian countries as these, you know, well, COVID's kind of stagnated everybody's development in the region. But, I mean, it is a growing economic region, hopefully post-COVID. You know, again, securitize the trade and military. I mean, Malaysia, for example, is a major manufacturer of car parts.
Okay.
And imagine if the U.S. And Malaysia and other countries can't use the shipping lanes in the South China Sea to move those car parts.
Yeah, then you can't buy your new Ford F-150.
It comes up correctly, right? And we already see what happens to the chip shortage now and the COVID impact and shutdown of factories overseas and impact on our supply chain and our products. So, yeah, this is important to y'all, you know, watching this. You know, it does matter to you. It doesn't hurt to learn more about what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is more a global economy than it ever has been, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. The U.S. has always been part of the global economy since the days before we were the United States back in the colonial era. But now, you know, we are the and we will continue to be the superpower on global economy, not just because we're the biggest economy and we have the highest per capita, but, you know, the ability to secure free and safe shipping of goods, you know, through critical points in the world is essential to U.S. security and trade interests.
Appreciate that comment, Tacky. That's interesting and a nice little change from our usual conversation. So we're branching out here.
Hey, you know, if you know me, I'll talk about almost any random topic you throw at me.
Speaking of, how do people talk to you?
Well, give us a ring at 617-722-2014, 617-722-2014. I do understand some of my staff has been in and out this month because August is quiet enough that my staff's been taking vacation. But also you can email me at tacky.chan, tacky.chan, at mahouse.gov. You know, email's a little bit quieter this month, but I suspect starting September will be much more faster. You can go to my Facebook account at State Representative Tacky Chan. Like this past weekend, we put up storm-related information in case you need to call National Grid. We need to call the city of Quincy because you flooded out your home, for example. We put those important information up there doing different types of situations, as well as seeing me being in different places. The few things you've seen in different places these days. And of course, tachychan.org. Tachychan.org has some phone numbers up there that may not require you to call me at all. You may be able to find the phone number you need there and move along. And of course, you know, QATV, you know, you guys provide a lot of essential information on your website as well as your podcast and the YouTube streaming. So, you know, plenty of resource people can get to before you even pick up the phone to find me.
Absolutely. Yep. Well, we're happy to do it. And we appreciate your help in doing it too every week here, Tacky. So good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you. See you soon.